Welcome to Beyond the Show, the podcast home of all things Cannabis Conference. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor of the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. It's April, and there's a certain gravity to this month on the calendar in the cannabis industry, and not just for the 420 celebrations. Spring is in the air, which means that the growing season is upon us. It's a fun and lively time of year, and even here at the Beyond the Show World Headquarters, we are positively brimming with excitement over the budding trees out in the courtyard and the shining sun in the sky. On the podcast this week, we've got Lindsay Renner, owner of Native Humboldt Farms. Lindsay is an enrolled member of the Round Valley Indian Tribes of Northern California, and she's a 25-year cannabis advocate and has been growing outdoor sun-grown cannabis for 15 years. She uses natural and indigenous farming practices to grow craft cannabis, and her company's vertical integration allows her the ease of pivoting to combat the volatile regulatory structure and market in California. Lindsay was one of the first 250 companies, one of the first 10 women, and the first enrolled tribal member to be licensed in California on January 1st, 2018. She is currently consulting with tribal nations to help write local and national ordinances to ensure the sustainable and successful rollout of the tribal cannabis market, and she highly emphasizes regenerative cannabis and food agriculture. Her mission is to help support a regenerative supply chain from Humboldt County to the Bay Area, as well as restoration efforts within tribal communities. And we got into that and much more this week. So please enjoy my conversation with Lindsay Renner. Well, hello, Lindsay, and welcome to the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to talk with you. A few months out from the conference here, but it's getting closer every day and every week. So we're very excited to get into some cannabis conference conversations here, as well as some cultivation roundtable conversations that, you'll be playing a role in that part of the event as well. But maybe to set the stage before we get into some conference specific stuff, could you sort of describe Native Humboldt Farms, maybe an overview of the property and some of the latest news from the farm as we get into the 2023 season?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. I'm really excited about the Cannabis Business Times Cannabis Conference this year. My name is Lindsay Renner, and I'm the owner of Native Humboldt Farms. So basically, Native Humboldt Farms is a, pretty small outdoor farm. I'm an enrolled member of a federally recognized tribe in California. So I'm Wailaki, and I'm registered with the Round Valley Indian Tribes. And my farm actually was a recreational area for my tribe. So before white incursion. So this is back before 1860. My tribe actually inhabited that property. They were eventually pushed to a reservation in Mendocino County. And then about 15 years ago, I actually got back possession of that property. So Native Humboldt Farms is really a place where I get to connect with, my ancestors, all of my heritage and everything that came before. I do a lot of regenerative farming. I use natural farming practices. I call them indigenous farming practices. And then Native Humboldt Farms actually also has manufacturing, distribution, and then soon we'll have non-storefront delivery retail.
Awesome. Yeah, and definitely I'm going to circle back to a couple of those threads, including the vertical integration aspect. I think it's going to be an important thing to touch on. But I do want to maybe see if you could elaborate on the indigenous farming practices a little bit, if only because obviously, as you know, and as a lot of listeners know, cannabis is, as an industry these days, is so heavily predicated on the history and everything that has come before. And there's a lot of ways to define that. A lot of difficult things came out of cannabis prohibition and that the industry is still wrestling with, successfully or not. We could argue that for a long time. But in that conversation, it's possible that outside of certain areas in the U.S., tribal populations are overlooked in that conversation, maybe. So I'm wondering if, from your corner of the world here, if you could maybe elaborate on the role that today's cannabis industry can play in honoring either tribal populations or tribal communities
And maybe Indigenous farming practices is one way. So if you could maybe elaborate on that a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do feel like tribal nations are kind of left out of the conversation a lot of the time. The crazy thing is that, so, you know, for one, in California, they're not really allowing tribes to compact. So they're kind of still segregated. I'm pretty sure I'm the only enrolled member that's licensed under the state in the state of California for the recreational market, you know, which is actually pretty unfortunate. So I definitely think that just even the conversation and the history gets looked over. The indigenous farming practices are really, so it's basically regenerative farming. And, you know, that's kind of a term that we've heard used quite a lot recently. And really, to me, it is indigenous farming. So it's basically, you know, I know that my family was there on the land. Clearly, they can't, you know, run into town to a grocery store and buy nutrients. You know, they're going to be using what they have there readily available to them at that moment to, you know, really do everything that they need to do. And so, you know, what we do, like we take plants, so natural and native plants that are existing on the property, for instance, you know, blackberries, things like that. And then we'll actually use that to create plant ferments. So fermented plant juices and fermented, you know, basically breeding indigenous microorganisms and then introduce that into our soil. So we're kind of like using what's naturally available to us around the property. And I think it's really important too, in a way that I kind of honor, you know, my heritage there, is it helps me to connect with the land, you know. And I think that cannabis is so great. Like, I love cultivating cannabis. And I think that, you know, we talk a lot about maybe the effects of cannabis after it's harvested, after it's cured, when it's ingested. But for me, you know, the real magic is actually when it's growing. And it's such like a powerful plant, you know, when it's in its growing phase. And so, you know, just getting to kind of keep the natural ecosystem, preserved as much as we can, and then use what's already there around the natural ecosystem with the cannabis. I think it's, you know, a good way that we get to kind of honor, you know, the indigenous heritage that was there before us.
Absolutely. Well, I know that, you know, just last summer, you were recognized with the Cannabis Leadership Award by Cannabis Business Times. And I went back and I was rereading that feature that we published, you know, alongside the award itself. And there's some great context in there about the land and about the property of Native Humboldt Farms. So I'll definitely include a link to that feature when this episode goes live. But just to touch on that a little bit, on the Leadership Award itself, I know this is kind of an overly broad question, but could you maybe describe what leadership means to you in the context of the industry and maybe how you developed a leadership style? I know this, you know, that's in the feature as well, but as we look to, you know, a challenging year ahead in 2023, what does leadership mean to you, and why might it be important?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, for one, receiving the Cannabis Leadership Award last year was just such an honor, and it really meant so much, especially being a Native American woman, you know, and quite possibly the only Native American woman licensed in California. You know, I really feel that Native Humboldt, what I've created with it, it allows me a platform to really get to, you know, talk about Native American history, indigenous farming, you know, and really give people a way to acknowledge, or kind of like, you know, yeah, create this platform for people to acknowledge that, you know, tribal nations that are really kind of left out of the conversation still. And so, you know, to get the leadership award in the first place just was so great, because it just really broadened that platform for me and really allows me to kind of share the story with so many more people. You know, I mean, I think being a leader in this space right now, a lot of it's about perseverance. You know, you definitely want to keep a positive mindset. You know, I think with the downturn and everything like that, you know, there's a lot of fear in the industry right now. And, you know, we definitely, you know, want to lead by example. I try to, you know, really understand, kind of get into every aspect of operations and understand every part of the business so that I can really, you know, lead by example, you know, when I'm going into anything. And I think that's really important in leadership.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, part of your overall leadership that you're bringing to the industry includes your role as an instructor at Cookies U up in Humboldt. And I'm sure that's another platform from which you can lead by example as well. But could you describe that a little bit as well? Just sort of what Cookies U is and what you've been up to there?
Yeah, absolutely. Cookies U is like my favorite thing, like ever, completely. It's my second year as an instructor, and the students actually touched down, I think this week. And so they you know, Cookies U puts out kind of like an equity application. I think that this year there was 1,200 applicants. They narrow it down to top 10 and then top 5. And now they have 5 equity applicants that are coming up to the Cookies campus in Humboldt County. They're going to live there for 8 weeks in these tiny homes that Cookies has built for them. They're so cute. And, you know, on the Cookies campus, it's actually one log treehouse. And so they have retail, manufacturing, distribution. They have cultivation, they have a greenhouse, they have an outdoor. And so basically these students get to come up and really just be fully immersed in the cannabis industry, you know, and really they're actually paid to come up. You know, if they're leaving a job or they're leaving an apartment or a home or anything like that, Cookies helps with those expenses so that they can just fully come up here and not worry about anything and just really focus on cannabis. And then, you know, they have different instructors. I know that Kevin Jodry is one. I'm one. You know, we go over, you know, everything. I mean, from A to Z, and just really prepare them. You know, last year we went over just kind of like the history of cannabis in Humboldt County and California in general, in the nation. You know, this year we're going over licensing and regulation, just kind of entrepreneurship and what that means. I do intro to topicals and infusions, and then also edibles, and then clearly some Korean natural farming, indigenous farming practices. And, you know, I mean, it's just so great because they're so eager. And I think the industry's hard right now. And it's such a breath of fresh air to have these students come up. They're so excited to learn. They just want to take in all the knowledge. And so it's a welcome change. And yeah, I'm just really proud to be associated with Cookies. And I really think the program is, you know, something that's needed and that really makes an impact. So.
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, as time goes on and as the industry continues to develop, it's great to see these sort of, you know, legitimate platforms coming together for the industry in an educational way. And I know there's, you know, universities are doing certain things and there are other platforms, but everything that I've read and heard about Cookies U has been pretty amazing. And especially, I mean, honestly, I think there's a lot to be said just for the location too, to have it in this part of the, in this part of California seems important in some way. So it's very exciting.
It is, yeah, and I think the education is so important. And then I also think, yes, them being up here and really kind of getting to see Humboldt. I mean, Humboldt is such a huge part of the cannabis industry and the legacy market that was here. So them being here is a really great thing, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, we were briefly talking about the Leadership Award. That goes back to August 2022. Here we are 8 months later or so, looking at 2023, and you know, from our impression, just sort of being a little bit on the sidelines, a little bit involved, but here as reporters in some way, is that things are getting much more challenging out there in the market. And part of that has to do with broader economic trends that aren't unique to cannabis, but are certainly having an effect. And certainly there are a lot of regulatory challenges too that are specific to cannabis. So I wanted to get a sense from you of, you know, from last summer to the spring of 2023, looking into this next upcoming summer, what are some of the big changes, I guess? How have things evolved since last summer? Not that last summer was the easiest time ever, but it seems like things are getting a little bit more challenging. Is that the case in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think that things are definitely getting more challenging for people. I think one of the things that, you know, I did with Native Humboldt Farms was from the beginning, from, you know, inception, from the day I was licensed, January 1st, 2018, I think I always kind of prepared for this time when things were going to be difficult. So, you know, the market's just so new, it's in its infancy. And, you know, I think that is also coming from the legacy market and just kind of not really being fully trusting of the whole situation and not knowing how it was going to play out. I think that I really always came from a standpoint of, you know, I had to be very cost conscious. Clearly, I'm not funded. And so, you know, I really had to, you know, from the very beginning, look at all of my costs and make sure that, you know, I was making the right decisions and everything. So this year has been okay for me, actually. I'm seeing a little bit of an upswing, I think, because of that. But, you know, I was thinking about it. And I think as other states come online right now, too, I think it's really important to kind of like look at what's going on in California and know that I think any industry, cannabis or not, if it's a new industry, it's going to be volatile, right? And it's going to take quite a while to stabilize. And so I think just with any company just setting up and knowing that there's going to be a period of years where you really just have to, you know, make very sound decisions. I think that, you know, one of the things that's really helped me over the last couple of years where it was really hard was that collaboration aspect. You know, I partnered with Cookies in 2021 on their Humboldt Grown initiative, which is also a great initiative that they're doing. They're partnered with 5 farms up in Humboldt County. And I'm one of them. We get exclusive genetics, which also, you know, helps in this time where we're seeing the market is really not doing that great. We get exclusive genetics, like one of them, the baby powder. I'm the only sun-grown cultivator in California that's had it this year. And so, you know, yeah, I just made a really conscious decision in the last couple of years to focus on, you know, consumer trends. What do consumers want? What are they looking for? At the end of the day, a lot of it is genetics. A lot of it is, you know, and that was hard as well, because being a legacy operator, you know, I have a sour diesel cut from 1999 and an OG cut from 1999, but the consumers didn't want that at that time, you know? And so I had to make a hard decision to, you know, go with Cookies, and so that I could create a product that the consumers were actually looking for. So I think just looking at, yeah, market trends, consumer trends, and kind of being flexible enough to move towards what they want instead of what I want personally, you know.
Yeah, I think what I've noticed is in a lot of these interviews on the podcast and also just for the magazine is this topic comes up a lot, you know, genetic selections, market trends, things like that. And I'm always curious, partly because California kind of plays like a tastemaker role in the industry, and things that like consumer demand trends in California generally make their way east across the country, maybe a few months later in most cases. And so, you know, I guess looking at late last year, heading into this year, what are consumers looking for, or what kind of profiles or even, you know, cannabinoid ratios are folks looking for generally?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, when I decided to partner with Cookies, it was because, you know, consumers weren't really looking for legacy genetics or even really sativas anymore. And over the last couple of years, we have seen a shift in that. And, you know, it could be from, there's been a lot of education going on. You know, there's a lot of legacy farmers that are kind of, you know, talking about getting our stories out there and letting consumers know that we exist. And, you know, I think there's a huge shift into consumers now wanting more legacy strains, and sativas in general. And I think that that's great. You know, and it's not taking over the market yet, but just even having the opportunity to reintroduce those into it. You know, I mean, like the sour diesel that we have, it's, you know, it's a cut that we've had for over 20 years and it's still so strong. Sometimes with, you know, the newer genetics, and honestly, not Cookies, all of Cookies' genetics are amazing. But some of the other strains, if we have them for about 4 years, they just kind of start to lose their vigor. And, you know, those legacy strains and those sativas, like the sour diesel and the OG, they don't. They really are just like so strong. And they're so important to cannabis history. And just, you know, so I'm really excited to see that shift for consumers this year.
Yeah, I know that in that feature that came out last year with the award, really the first third of the story recounts the 2015 fire and a lot of just the just a terrible circumstance. And we can certainly talk about that, or I could certainly direct listeners to that feature. But in that article, you also mentioned the sour diesel cuts there as well as being one of the few things that survived that tragedy. And so I guess one question is, and I don't know if it's overly naive, I just don't know offhand, but how do you keep cuts like that for 20 plus years in good condition and make sure that they're not, you know, that they're, you know, surviving into this new era?
Yeah. I mean, with a lot of work, and it's a lot of pressure as well, you know. And when the fire happened, I mean, we did manage to save some of those cuts. We actually saved 2,500. So that was amazing. But it's a very scary thing to know that if something goes wrong, that you could actually lose these genetics that you've had for 20 years. But, you know, we keep them, you know, we keep moms and we switch out the moms. And it's just, you know, been that cycle over and over and over for the last 20 years. And then, like I said, I think that it really helps with the certain strains, like when you have such an amazing strain, like such a strong strain, like the sour diesel, it makes it a lot easier to just keep them around.
For sure. I know you mentioned earlier, sort of at the top of the conversation, vertical integration and, you know, the steps and the work that it took along the way to acquire, you know, licenses sort of up and down that supply chain. And it seems like that's a very important asset now, nowadays. Could you maybe elaborate on why you sought that out, those licenses out, and the importance of having that vertical control, especially in 2023?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a very small farm. It's probably one of the smallest in Humboldt, actually. And so, you know, 2017, I knew, you know, I needed to move into manufacturing, right? There was just no way I was going to be able to compete with these larger farms. Clearly, we knew that there was just these huge farms that were going to, or we predicted that these huge farms were going to come online. And so what manufacturing did was allowed me to take, you know, 1 pound of cannabis. We were actually making flower rosin at the time. And so 1 pound could turn into hundreds of, you know, topicals or edibles. And those actually have higher margins. And so, yeah, it was really important for me to move into manufacturing, but what I didn't have until 2020 was distribution. And so I used third-party distributors, and it was just so difficult to not have, you know, control over that final step in the supply chain. You know, without distribution in California, you can't deal with retailers. You can't drop off samples. You can't deliver, you know, retail-ready packaged product. You can't get paid. And that was a huge thing.
You know, one thing that I've noticed that's actually come up in recent conversations on this podcast was this kind of like IOU problem between retailers and growers. And you know, maybe if you could maybe elaborate a bit on closing that gap and making sure that payments do take place the way they should.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a huge problem. You know, cultivators, manufacturers aren't getting paid from distributors. And, you know, you just can't operate a business that way. And everyone's already struggling, you know. And so, you know, I mean, up until this point, there really isn't a way that you can solve that without actually obtaining your own distribution license. Distributions and vertical integration in general, I think, you know, when people mention it, it's just this very overwhelming topic, you know, and people are going like, no way, I can't even do this license. You know, it's just too much. It's too much compliance. It's too much on the workload. But what I like to remind people, so my distribution, I only use it for myself. And then, you know, I mean, there's all of these things. Like in California, you can actually obtain multiple licenses within the same premise. So I was actually already paying rent for manufacturing in Eureka, California. And you know, it wasn't a lot. I mean, it was under $5,000 to just add distribution to it. And, you know, am I Amazon? No, absolutely not. Am I carrying 40 brands and distributing them to retail? No, I'm just doing it so that I have control of that part of the supply chain. So it doesn't have to be this big, scary thing. And honestly, it's pretty cost effective. And it definitely adds a lot, you know, as far as compliance and the workload and everything like that. But, you know, I think there's definitely ways to manage that. And, you know, there's, you know, dope CFO that helps with accounting and everything like that. So I think there's ways to do it. And I always encourage people not to be so afraid of it. Because when you do, you know, control that part of the supply chain, in my opinion, I mean, it's really the only way that you can be successful when so many distributors actually just are not paying, you know, vendors right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think you make a good point there, obviously about the control aspect, but also too about the maybe the intimidation aspect. I mean, I could definitely understand a lot of growers maybe not wanting to wade into these waters of vertical integration and more licenses and more work and more interactions with the state. It can certainly seem like a headache. But this is a great example here of it turning out to be very cost effective and actually getting more out of costs that are already on the books, so to speak. And it seems to me like this is a really good example of something that might come up at the Cultivation Roundtable at Cannabis Conference. So I just wanted to touch on that real quick. You know, we're super excited about rolling this event out, bringing 150 growers together for a day-long series of conversations. Could you talk about just that idea a little bit? Of course, growers are always talking to other growers. I mean, there's, you know, group texts and people are getting together with folks either in their neck of the woods or in their state market or friends who've moved away or what have you. But it seems maybe uncommon to get this many growers in one room. So could you just speak to the importance of just having these conversations and sort of getting out of our bubbles for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I am so excited, you know, for this year's Cannabis Conference because of this Cultivation Roundtable. And honestly, when Cannabis Business Times reached out to me and told me that they were really going to make cultivation a focus this year, you know, I was just so excited because I think as a cultivator, we felt, at least I felt for the last few years, almost like left out of the conversation, especially when it comes to conferences. You know, I've been to a few and I've talked to a lot of farmers that are like, I'm just not going to go to it, you know, because it's not focused on cultivation. There's nothing for me there, which in my opinion, isn't necessarily true. You know, I'm always looking for packaging or anything like that. But, you know, to make cultivation a focus is important because in my opinion, cultivation is really the foundation of this industry. And we kind of have been left out of this conversation. And if cultivation isn't sustainable, if it's not succeeding, if it doesn't have support, you know, I feel like the rest of the industry really is going to be affected. It is affected. And so for one, just getting all those cultivators down to this conference. So not only can they, you know, network with each other, but they can also network with the rest of the industry and see what's going on there, you know, and just the fact of, yeah, I mean, conversations within cultivators are extremely important. I think a lot of us are, you know, somewhat secluded, reclusive, you know, maybe we're not in areas where we always get to get together. A lot of us are constantly on the farm and we're working. So I think it's so important to really, you know, for cultivators to take that time, come down, come to the Cultivation Roundtable, you know, meet with all of these other cultivators. Let's talk about these issues. Let's try to form solutions. There definitely are solutions. And honestly, I mean, there's probably a lot of ways where we can all link up together. You know, I mean, you know, partnerships that we can create and ways that we can support each other. So I'm just completely excited about it. And, yeah, just really happy that Cannabis Business Times really chose to make cultivation such a focus this year. It's really great.
But yeah, it's great to hear. Our team is super excited. It's kind of provided a breath of fresh air too. I mean, this is our seventh year of doing the show and it's evolved quite a bit over the years, but you know, we just took a step back and realized it's time to just get down to the roots of the matter and focus on on cultivation, really. I mean, just to put it simply, kind of like what you're saying. And so the roundtable just, it makes a lot of sense, I think. And I'm just super excited to see it play out. I think it's going to be a really fun day for sure.
Me too.
And yeah, just a few months away, really. So very excited to see you out there, Lindsay. It was great chatting with you today about Native Humboldt Farms and so much more. And yeah, we'll see you out in Vegas before too long.
Amazing. I can't wait.
That's a wrap on another episode of Beyond the Show. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Lindsay Renner. I know I did. It's always great to get a chance to talk about Northern California in particular. As we mentioned in that interview, kind of the the roots of the cannabis industry in the U.S. in many ways. So it's nice to shine a light on her corner of the universe. It's great to hear about some of the planning that's been going into Cannabis Conference. You know, the whole team here at Cannabis Business Times has been working hard on Cannabis Conference 2023, as well as the advisory board. They've played a critical role, as they do every year, in putting this event together and just getting the structure of it ready months in advance of the actual show. Speaking of, you know, we're only a few months out from the show, August 15th and 17th this year at Paris, out in Las Vegas. We do have our super early bird prices. They are still available through April 26th, so make sure you log on to cannabisconference.com, save yourself a few bucks. We know you're going to be out in Vegas. We know you're going to Cannabis Conference this year. We've shared with you all sorts of fantastic reasons why it's important to come out this year. This is going to be a great year. This is our seventh annual, and it really is our biggest and best yet. Partly for that cultivation roundtable, but for so many other reasons as well. So check out cannabisconference.com. Get yourself signed up for the show. Grab the newsletter too. Sign up for the newsletter while you're there. We're going to be sharing all sorts of news between now and August and beyond. You know, we like to say on this show that we go well beyond the show here on this weekly podcast, and we will make sure to do the same in that newsletter as well. So get yourself signed up, and we'll see you out in Las Vegas. Thanks.